Thanks, Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, August 8th, 2015. You are listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Kips Dube. Here are our top stories this evening. Some Zimbabweans in Britain are setting up a charity foundation for taking care of the needs of orphans in the Southern African nation. The killing of Cecil the Lion in Zimbabwe has sparked a debate on ways of conserving wild animals.
I think although the totem is a very interesting issue, I think it's not going to affect at all help the conservation of species.
And tonight we will give you a closer look at the late Zimbabwean writer and activist Chenjerai Hobe. These stories and much, much more coming up. Some Zimbabweans living in Britain are setting up a charity foundation for taking care of the needs of orphans in the Southern African nation. Nomsa Nekevana was born in Kezi, Matabeleland South Province, says she is teaming up with other Zimbabweans to help orphans whose parents died due to diseases like AIDS. She speaks to Studio 7 about the proposed Mopane Foundation and related issues.
When we initially started, it was just a personal project because Amanyoni is where I went to. That's the school I went to when I was back in Zimbabwe in the 70s to the 80s. The people that I sent to do that, they came back, they came with a list of 13 kids that needed assistance. Then that's when we realized that the demand is so high. Then eventually I took another 6 on top, we're making it 8. Then now, they are expecting that every year we're taking kids, and the demand is just keeping on and on and on, coming on. So I just spoke to other people here that are like-minded, and we decided to form an organization, which is called Mopane Foundation International, hoping that we can reach more kids than we have now, because now I'm working with people from all over Zimbabwe, not just from Kezi.
So now, what type of assistance will you be seeking, you know, when you finally form this kind of charity organization?
Any kind of support that can help us assist the kids, because we're paying for their school uniform, we're paying for their fees, their school uniforms, their stationery, and we're hoping to get them in vocational courses that eventually we hope that even if we can't take them all the way through to university, but they can be trained to do some other courses that can allow them to sustain themselves eventually in the future and look after their families and things like those. And we're hoping that maybe one day in Zimbabwe we'll find companies that can allow them to train so that they can be self-sufficient.
That was Nomsa Nikevana, a Zimbabwean living in Britain, speaking with Studio 7 from Sheffield in the United Kingdom. The killing of Cecil the Lion in Zimbabwe has sparked a debate on ways of conserving wild animals, with some critics saying local people have great ideas on killing game. Cultural activists say Zimbabweans used to avoid the indiscriminate killing of wild animals through the use of totems. However, some academics like Professor Peter Mandi of the National University of Science and Technology believe that such practices don't work in preserving animals. He speaks first about lion research in Zimbabwe.
There's quite a bit of research going on lions in this country because generally in Africa we are concerned about the decline of lions. And hunting in places has certainly helped that decline. And I must say legal hunting has helped that decline until we realized the social structure of lions. One has to be very careful which male lion one is shooting. But in Wangi National Park, there's the Oxford University group. In Mana Pools National Park, there was a national parks ecologist who did his PhD, his doctorate on lions and their territories in Mana Pools. And then in Gonarezou National Park in the southeast, there's another NGO team working on wild dogs. And because wild dogs are harassed very badly by lions, they also work on lions in the Gonarezou National Park. I hope I'm right in saying that lions in Gonarezou National Park are slowly on the increase.
What is the future of lions like?
In African areas is going to be precarious because they eat livestock. And so until we've got a general sympathy for carnivores by both NGO groups who are very sympathetic to lions, but they live in New York or Washington or wherever they live. And the local Africans, are they ever going to get a sympathetic attitude to carnivores? Not just lions, but wild dogs and hyenas and even cheetahs as well. And that's going to take quite a few years of careful projects and research and attitude changing. And until then, the lion really doesn't have a strong future in African communal areas.
Now, is it possible for researchers to actually rope in the issue of, you know, using some local knowledge, something like totems, in order to preserve some of these animals?
I've had a student working on totems in this side of the country, the Matabeleland site. The use of totems, which is very, very interesting in our Africans here. Not all Africans in Africa seem to have totems that are fixed to their family groups. And or clans, even, we call them. And so this group here will have the name Sibanda or Shumba and not allowed to hurt the lion. But nobody else, all the other groups, have got a different totem, and they can still come and hit the lion because it's a conflict with them. So I think, although the totem is a very interesting issue, I think it's not going to affect at all the conservation of species.
That was Professor Peter Mandi of the National University of Science and Technology speaking with Studio 7 from Bulawayo. For perspective on the use of totems, we spoke to cultural activists Sol Kwakuba Ndlovu and Tandego Zintimkandla. Ndlovu says totems have over the years played a key role in preserving animals.
People were very sensitive to ecology. It was not allowed for one, for example, to hunt during a time when it was known that animals such as duikers and springboks and so forth and so on were pregnant. Animals reproduce seasonally like goats. That is why months, particularly in a language like Iskalanga, some months are called by names of animals, Mapemre. That is a month when duikers are reproducing. So people were not allowed to hunt them. And if the government could actually mount a campaign, a well-tailored, well-designed campaign that would involve traditional leaders and people in the rural areas, that could help conserve our ecology.
Now, Mr. Mkandla, what do you think about the way animals were protected?
People were supposed to utilize their natural resources, including animals, to the extent that they did not cause instability in the environment. And again, remember again, some animals were killed or were hunted for medicinal purposes. If you finished all the animals that they had certain medicines that the traditional healers used, what were people going to use in future? Therefore, our people understood that nature was there for them to benefit and so to continuously benefit, they had to limit the damage that they did to the environment.
Now, Mr. Ndlovu, was it possible for people to use their totems in order to, you know, control the environment, like killing of animals?
Yes, indeed. It was taboo for people whose totem is elephant. They did not eat elephant flesh. And those of the Swandans, the carnivores, they didn't eat lions and tigers and jackals and all these animals that actually live on flesh. Konyoni, they also did not eat birds. That is why in the Vele culture you hear of songs such as Abasai Tandin Kuku, Abasai Tandin Yamai, Abasai Tandin Kuku, Kuku, Abasai Tandin Yamai, Abasai Tandin. That a song was sung in order to emphasize that the eating of birds, the eating of chickens, and anything that was in the family of birds was taboo. And that changed the balance of nature throughout, and people lived healthier, happier lives.
Mr. Mkandla, I think you can chip in here, you know, concerning totems. And the way things are happening right now, we know that there's a lion that was killed in Zimbabwe. Some are killing giraffes, some are killing elephants. So all this, you know, how can it be used now in terms of people's totems, in terms of, you know, the old ways of preserving the environment? Is it possible to do that?
Yes, I think what we need is serious social conscientization of our people so that they understand the importance of nature, wildlife included. Rather than being a source of tourist income, it's also part of them. You cannot call yourself a complete being if you discard part of your being. You are incomplete, you are disabled, you are deformed. So the government and the powers that be, through its various structures, instead of moaning about one single lion that has been killed, we need a holistic approach to the conservation of wild animals. There should be a lot of publicization of these rules so that whosoever breaches them faces the full wrath of the law. If we talk of one lion, one of other things, multitudes of other animals, which must also be equally protected. Animals need to be protected just as much as people are protected. They are part of us. The world would be incomplete without these wild animals.
That was cultural activist Tandego Sitimkandla. You also heard from another traditionalist, Sol Kwakuba Ndlovu, speaking with Studio 7 from Plumtree, Matabele South Province. You're listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. And now it's time for the Women's Forum.
Welcome to the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. Today we are lucky to be joined by one of the 30 young Mandela Washington Fellows that were in Washington under the program.
My name is Kudakwashe Makuzwa and I'm from Harare, Zimbabwe. I'm the co-founder and managing director of Anaya Investments, which is an agro-based company. Do farming in Zimbabwe in Shamba District.
Kuda, you were one of the three Zimbabweans that were awarded a grant. Tell us a little bit about this. How did this come about?
This grant came about because I was part of the Mandela Washington Fellowship under the Business and Entrepreneurship Track for 2015. So if you're under the Business and Entrepreneurship Track, there is a competition that you can compete for a grant from the USAGF. They support grants up to 25,000 of business people and entrepreneurs who may have an idea, like as a startup, or who may have a business running already but needs funds to scale up their businesses. It was open to all people that were under the Business and Entrepreneurship Track, so I applied in that track.
How many of you applied, and what do you think made your business be able to be awarded this grant?
In total, there were 175 people that applied for this grant. One is this grant to do honey production or beekeeping. And why I think that my project stood out is that it was clear on its social impact, because I'm going to do this in the form of a cooperative where I'll identify women who are in the Shamban district, women that I've been working with for a long time in farming, but because of inconsistent incomes, they are failing to adequately provide for their families. So my impact was quite clear that if you do beekeeping, there's that extra income source that is coming to me and to these women, and it will go a long way in empowering them and their families. If you do beekeeping, it goes beyond just bringing in the money. It is also an environmental bias in the sense that bees act as pollinators. The other thing is that if you are owning beehives, it means that you cannot let your bees get burnt when the wildfires come. So we'll do more in terms of putting out fire guards.
How many women are you hoping to be working with? And also, did you get like a big check, or how does the money get disbursed?
I'm looking at women that are either widowed or single or even married, but do not have that consistent income. So those are the women that I'm targeting, and they are living in the rural areas, particularly in the Shamba district. This money is a total of 25,000, but you just don't get it as 25,000. You need to firstly put in a revised and clear budget of what exactly are you going to be doing, of what exactly are you going to be buying, and have documents to back that up. It comes in three batches, which you should justify why you need that first batch. For example, for myself, I would obviously need to identify the women. I would need to buy the beehives. I would need to identify the person or the consultant who is an expert in beekeeping. So I'll just be putting monetary values to that and then justify and then ask for the first batch of the money to come in, and then I'll start implementing. So it doesn't come as a full 25,000 check. It comes in batches after justification.
Time is not on our side. Thank you very much, Kuda Kwashe Makuzwa, for having been our guest on the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women.
Thank you, Marvelous.
I'm Marvelous Mklanganya Huye.
Thanks very much, Marvelous Mklanganya Huye. We hope you are going to have a wonderful weekend. And finally, the death in Norway last month of Zimbabwean writer and activist Tjengerai Wobe rocked the African literary world. Wobe, who was 59, went into exile in 2001. He had been a critic of the government of President Robert Mugabe. Fellow writers and readers agree Wobe combined masterful literary technique with patriotism and a passion for justice. VOA's Adam Phillips has a profile.
Tjengerai Wobe was born to a village chief in rural Rhodesia in 1956. He was deeply horrified by the violence he witnessed during the 13-year war for independence against Britain that ended in 1980. Jack Mpunje, a fellow Zimbabwean poet and refugee, was Hove's longtime friend. He says pre-independence writers usually wrote in European literary styles, but Bones reveled in the rural rhythms and imagery of Hove's native Shona language to tell a homegrown tale.
He was deeply involved in the African culture, the dance, the music, the drums, and so on, but also the oral tradition, which we call the oricha, the folk tales, the proverbs. He loved that. We have lost a writer who was steeped in African traditions to tell his story about the world.
It was a story that often intertwined hope with disappointment and sorrow. Mpunje says it broke Hove's heart to witness what he saw as the brutality of British rule continue in an independent Zimbabwe.
He loved the people, he loved the masses, and he did not like anybody who exploited the ordinary person. So colonialism as well as new government. And that became the main theme that runs through his poetry, short stories, as well as the novel itself.
The universal struggle for justice is a constant theme throughout Hove's four volumes of poetry, which include Red Hills of Home and Rainbows in the Dust. In 2001, Hove recited his poem Dispute at an international festival in Medellin, Colombia.
Dispute. The strength of the republic is not measured in armored cars or guns or poisons or disappearances. The strength of the republic is measured in beggars' arms. Arms, the dreams of the poor, the waste of the rich. The strength of the republic is measured in ants, not elephants in the park.
Hove helped to found and head the Zimbabwe Writers Union, a group of dissidents that gathered in Harare's cafes. His criticism of government repression was met with death threats and other intimidation tactics. In 2001, Hove was forced into exile without his family. He first went to France and then to the United States, where he was offered writers' fellowships at Brown University and elsewhere. He finally settled in Stavanger, Norway, where he was given refuge by the International Cities of Refuge Network, or ICORN. The organization shelters writers and artists at risk and promotes freedom of expression. ICORN director Helge Lunde knew Hove well. He says Hove was not able to complete any novels in exile.
It was not possible for him to continue exactly as before. Of course, he continued to write poetry. He also wrote drama and, of course, a lot of journalism and a lot of nonfiction. I'm very much sure that his work will live on.
Before his sudden death on July 12th, apparently from liver disease, Hove was working on a major book about writers in exile and the toll it had taken on them. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Now to recap today's top stories. Some Zimbabweans living in Britain are setting up a charity foundation for taking care of the needs of orphans in the Southern African nation. And the killing of Cecil the lion in Zimbabwe has sparked a debate on ways of conserving wild animals. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Gandhi. This is Gibbs Dube in Washington, D.C., wishing you a pleasant evening.